The architect has an argument about designing spaces that are more functional and beautiful and tailored to the individuals and family instead of just being like, well, I've got this much money, I'm going to make as much house as possible.
That honestly does seem like the American way, though.
Right? Bigger is better.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
Four! Masochist and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 141, we're discussing the genre of architecture nonfiction.
Pleasing whoever sent us in a suggestion several years ago to our genre suggestion list to read, I think, historical architecture books is what they wanted.
I think that happened, yes. And I think it was a family member of one of the hosts.
Yes, I also believe that is true.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, BC.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian also in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Anna, and I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, which is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute tribe and the Moapa band of Paiutes.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist. I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the Itouez in Quebec, Canada.
Are there any announcements?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Good slide, as they say in Germany.
Really?
That's the greeting, is you wish someone a good slide into the new year.
Wow. That's pretty great.
I don't remember how to say it in German.
Snowvingodum.
Which one did you just say, Matthew?
I think it's just with the new year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the, you know, New Year's Eve alcohol cheers thing, I believe.
Sure.
Strangely, almost relevant to my book later. Almost.
A little teaser. I like the language of good slide because it feels very involuntary. Where it's
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, totally. Being drawn to the new year, whether you want to or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just kind of slipping on the snow.
Yep.
And ice.
Good slide. But it could be fun. It could be like, wee.
Could be. Wee.
Yeah. Get the best out of the inevitable thing that is happening.
Windmilling arms and yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see architecture book list on this announcement list.
Yes.
So as we have had in all of our episodes in the last year and a half or so, we have a book list of books in this genre, today's genre being architecture nonfiction, by authors of color, Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors. You'll find that list in our show notes and at our website, bookclubform.com, to help you diversify your reading and your reader's advisory. I'll mention on this one that the titles that we have by Indigenous authors, we had to dig a little bit deeper. So we've got at least one there that might be harder to find and is pretty specific to British Columbia, but there are two there that are available to download online. There is a book, from the University of Manitoba.
From a university in Manitoba.
From a university in Manitoba. Whether or not it's the University of Manitoba, you can find that out in the show notes. And another one, a dissertation on Indigenous architecture that you can find. So check those out.
And yes, thanks, RJ, again for doing this. Thank
you for finding those two specific resources I mentioned.
If you want academic sources, I am the person to ask, evidently. also, I did, after Anna complained last episode, I did update our website.
Oh, hooray!
Yay!
So it should be up to date.
Whee! No more announcements? Are we actually, is that it?
I think that's it.
That I feel weird about how we don't...
That's the only one I knew of for sure. I figured Matthew would think of some in the middle of the podcast and he'd be able to edit them.
I think next episode I'll have more announcements for us.
Right. You'll have some guesting to talk about.
Probably.
Yeah.
Cool.
I said that with such like. I'm excited to be another. Yeah. I am excited to be on other things when I get to co-host or whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about architecture. You can put it off no longer.
So, nonfiction books about buildings, architects, architectural styles, design books. When I did a search for this, I found a lot of landscaping books, which was kind of not what I expected.
Do any of us have background in architecture? Not just reading it, but just like the concept, because I have none.
No. Yeah.
I have some very specific, that is, I have read as in quotation marks here to some extent, two books by the same person that I read a book from this month.
Oh, okay.
But I also think that I do listen to podcasts that discuss architecture. Mm-hmm. 99% Invisible is a book that definitely, not every episode.
Podcast. You said book.
Yes. It's also a book now, I guess.
It is also a book now.
It is.
And maybe we'll talk about it.
It is a podcast that talks about design things, and some of the time it talks about architecture. So that's something, that is a way that I'm exposed to architecture things. Mm-hmm. I also really like looking at buildings when I go on holiday to places. That kind of counts, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I just remembered a book that I read that I guess is partially architecture. And that is The Gentrification of the Mind, Witness to a Lost Imagination by Sarah Schulman.
Oh, that was so good.
Yeah, it was really good. I think it's about a lot of things, but certainly like mentions architecture, or at least like urban development, and has certainly like changed and influenced the way that I look at new businesses that pop up, and like, yeah, trends in interior design for sure.
Mm. Yeah, I've read a number of different more design focused books, plus a handful of like here and there. Like I read The Geography of Nowhere a few years back, and just a handful of other ones. I should have prepped for this, and I totally different.
Anna, you have very good reason for not having prepped for this. It's fine.
Yeah, I know. So I have read a handful of things here and there on the topic, but it's not like a central focus of anything I read in any way. This is like truly just a like, you know, you get this like random bug once in a while where you're like, huh, what an interesting topic. Maybe I'll read a book about it. And then, you know, you get that book and 99% of the time you never even get around to it.
This is a very you problem that not everybody deals with.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's many other people who could relate to me, okay?
Yes, yes.
Yep, yes, that is me.
Thank you. I thought you might be somebody who could totally relate to this. It's like a totally interesting topic. I just never get around to reading the book. So I actually had a huge number of books on my shelf. But then Matthew, and having a conversation with me, like said no to me reading a whole bunch of them because he didn't think they were architecture books, because he considers the more urban planning books, which is another topic that we have.
Oh boy.
And so then we had this long back and forth about like architecture and urban planning and design books and what's the difference and how do they overlap and blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
So anyways, I did not end up reading a bunch of those, but I also hit a massive reading slump where like every time I tried to pick up a book this month, I would get like anywhere from a few sentences to a few pages in, and then I just find myself randomly wandering the house, not doing anything because I just could not sit down and read. So I ended up just finding an audiobook of something.
Yeah. No, I had the same trouble looking for stuff where I was like, oh, I'm totally interested. That's urban planning, Megan.
Yes.
Wait, Megan, how many books about bicycle lanes did you pick up?
None. I read none because I've already read them all. But in architecture background, I have to say, like, I took a class on architecture in high school where I built a little model of the Hagia Sophia. I took a humanities course in CEJEP where we did a walking tour of like interesting buildings and neighborhoods in Montreal. And then in grad school, I took the planning and design of libraries course. And then because I did all the architecture stuff and preservation, you talk a lot about buildings in terms of environmental control. So that particular, like those segments of things. But then like, aside from that, my father was a construction worker and he built our house. So like, it's not exactly the architecture, like of statement buildings, say, but architecture of the built environment, like the house that you live in, is still involved in architecture. So some of that as well.
That reminded me that I do read those articles about, like, you know, the best designed libraries of the year or whatever, which also would fall under architecture nonfiction, just not as a book. And so maybe that's, I am more likely to consume this as like an article format.
Yeah.
Article or podcast format.
But also, I will say that I think that, what was the art thing? We did like some sort of art genre last year, didn't we?
Oh boy, I think it was just arts. I think it was just art nonfiction.
Okay, yeah. But photo books are something that falls into architecture.
Yeah.
And so you can look at pictures of – I definitely have spent a lot of time looking at pictures of buildings on the internet.
Yeah, I follow a couple of Instagram sites that are just pictures of architecture, for sure.
So that is another thing as well. I also want to say, I think it's kind of hilarious that we've been mentioning – we said this was architecture nonfiction, as though architecture fiction was a genre that just existed.
I mean, we talked about it. That's pure Nessie.
Yeah, yeah. Gormenghast, maybe?
I've never read House of Leaves. It's House of Leaves.
Yeah. Honestly, I guess since I like spooky house books so much, maybe architecture fiction is what I need to read more of.
Yeah.
Please recommend me. Recommend your architecture fiction books to me.
Shirley Jackson. Have you read House on Haunted Hill?
Yeah.
No, I have not read that one.
It's a good spooky house.
Yeah, I think everyone else has read it, so it's my turn to read it next time it comes up.
Next time we have a genre it applies to.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention this list that I found and shared with you all this month of the five kinds of nonfiction, which was written towards defining different kinds of children's nonfiction, but I think certainly can apply to adult nonfiction and is a good way to sort of break down, like, a lot of things count as the nonfiction genres beyond the scope of just what we've read. So the list that I got from Scientific American, and I can put this in the show notes, there's traditional nonfiction, which it defines as sweeping overviews of a broad topic with straightforward expository language. Browsable nonfiction, a book that can be picked up and open to any page full of illustrations, small tidbits of information. This is actually the kind of book that I read this month. Expository literature. I don't really know what the difference between expository literature and narrative nonfiction is. Narrative nonfiction has a strong storytelling style. Expository literature may not strike you as nonfiction. The approach to and language are creative with a strong voice. Anyway, and active nonfiction, meant to get you engaged, learn a skill, do an activity, design something. And so I imagine there's a whole world of architecture books that I don't know if we read any of this month that are designed towards people who are either who are doing architecture or architecture adjacent.
How to architect.
How to architect. yeah, renovations or...
Well, I think how to design, like, functional things or the kind of language you want to bring into a discussion with an architect or a builder might be why all those, like, outdoor landscaping deck building books got tagged as architecture. But I'm not super sure.
I think there's a lot of just people like to look and dream, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, they just want images of things that they imagine they could have if they save up enough money and somehow whatever happens. And they look through all those.
If I threw out all of the things in my house.
Yeah, exactly right. I know. I look at a lot of those and I'm like, could not live like that.
Well, if we're moving from background to searching how we found what we found, when I searched the library catalog for architecture subject heading, it also gave me a bunch of landscaping books because they're defined as landscape architecture. And so I checked out, did not read, one of the, like, very short introduction books to landscape architecture. And so I wonder if that counts as architecture. I mean, it does, I'm sure, if you perform it professionally. But in terms of, like, reading architecture books.
I guess it depends on why you're reading them.
Yeah.
And, like, it's probably definitely one of those things where, like, where does one begin and the other end in mm-hmm. some cases? It's not like how the definition of library varies wildly in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really just commenting about how academic websites keep asking me if I've, you know, written this article about like microbiology cell libraries. And the answer is no. No, I have not. That is not the libraries I'm aware of.
So I searched for things about brutalism and concrete because the two of the main Instagram things that I follow is like SOS brutalism and concrete zen. And that's just something I like to look at. So I was looking for that kind of like coffee table style book because I like to look at pretty pictures. But I also did some like just look through the architecture subject heading to see what things were available. And I had stuff on hold, like I mentioned before, that were clearly actually just urban planning. So I was like, later, I will read you for the month that we pick up that particular genre.
Yeah, like I said, I had a ton of those things that counted a little more towards urban design and stuff like that, books on my shelf. I went to the bookstore to look for some books that were a little more explicitly architecture focused. It was very interesting to go figure out where they were located in the bookstore because they are mixed in with all the art books. So it's literally could be like a book about a famous artist right next to a book about architecture or an architect, which is, could go multiple ways on like, is it an art or not? That is a debate for people who actually are in the field and not for me, who has like not got the context to get into that discussion. But actually I did really enjoy looking through that and seeing the sort of back and forth play of what they were talking about, how kind of they influence each other. Even just by looking on the shelf, you can sort of see how these things influence each other. I picked a couple of books out, but then I hit that total reading wall this month and just could not. So I started just searching around on the internet, discovered that when you put in like best architecture books, what you get are like best books of architecture for architecture students. Or like the 10 books or the 12 books or the 50 books that you should read if you're a new architect or an architecture student, which is really fascinating. Got lots of those lists.
Do you think there's like architecture Twitter, like there is library Twitter?
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's just full of people getting upset about like not understanding what architecture is.
Yeah. Actually, it's very funny because by working in a health sciences university, I've ended up following a fair number of like nursing and not so much pharmacy Twitter, but like nursing Twitter. And so I've got a better sense of like there's a whole universe of nursing Twitter out there with their own dramas and like things going on and people getting pissed at each other. And like, I'm like, wow, this is exactly like library Twitter, just nursing Twitter. It's literally the same thing.
I have a friend who's a speech therapist. And so sometimes I'll get speech therapy memes.
I love it.
Now I'm just afraid that our podcast is going to get dragged by architecture Twitter for not understanding it properly.
Oh, totally.
I mean, at least we're nodding to the fact that they exist and they know way more about this than us.
Yeah, no. Like, we are being very upfront about our complete lack of context for this subject matter. So I finally ended up just like looking through what I had available by audiobook and just picking something. I literally, because of the particular audiobook platform that I was looking through, I like literally was just doing searches by like the word house or the word like architect or the word like just various words that relate to architecture and putting those in there and seeing what came up and then limiting them to nonfiction and seeing what I found. Because like that was like these platforms don't have a like tag for architecture.
What they wouldn't.
Yeah. There's not enough out there. There's not enough people looking for books on architecture. Like, they don't have those tags. So I had to, like, just do keyword searches and then pick something from that.
That is definitely one of the major problems with ebook platforms that I've run into recently is, like, you know, we talk about things like subject terms so much. And then it's like, we're just using whatever the ebook platform is gives us. And so the one I've run into a bunch recently is manga not being separated. And other things being lumped into that category as well. So all the light novels on this one platform are categorized as graphic novels, as comics, even though the light novels are just words. Mm-hmm. It's a novel with some pictures in it. And it's just like, I borrowed one. I was very disappointed. And then I returned it. I'm like, cool, that's a waste of the library's money. Someone was like, no, it's really good. I'm just like, I'm sorry. It could be, but it's not what I wanted at the time.
Yeah, searchability on ebook databases is so different than on library catalogs. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one question for us before we get into the books we read. Can we name any architects?
Yes. Courbusier, I.M. Pye, Frank Lloyd Wright.
Mm-hmm. Gaudi.
Oh gosh. I watched a documentary on a guy some years ago.
Frank Lloyd Wright was the one I was thinking of because I bought part of a Lego set based on one of his buildings at a thrift store. Didn't realize it was only part of it until I got home and tried to build it.
I don't know if Buckminster Fuller counts, but he's the guy who did the geodesic dome thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Frank Gehry was who I was thinking of.
I guess the other thing to think about is, like, in some ways, some cities don't seem like they're known for architecture in the same way as other places.
Sure. I mean, but I think that gets back to, like, architecture being seen as, like, fancy buildings and like, tall buildings. Whereas, you know, the places we're all sitting in right now are architecture.
True. Mm-hmm. A while ago, I designed a Lego skyline, which is these Lego sets of, like, famous cities with famous buildings, like, recognizable buildings from them. And I made one for Vancouver. And, like, last week, some random person messaged me on Twitter and was like, I really like this one. Can you sell me the instructions for the one you've made? I used to live in Vancouver and yours is the best one I've seen. I'm like, oh, I was so excited. Nice. And I was like, let me see what I can do. And then I went and, like, I sent them a PDF of the things. And I was just like, a lot of these parts that I chose apparently don't exist in real life. So do what you can with what I've got.
Matthew, I love the idea that you are just like a really, like, super highbrow, like, fancy-dancy architect who's like, the cost does not matter. It is my vision that matters.
Well, when I designed it, the cost didn't matter because it was entirely a virtual thing.
Yeah.
I guess link in the show notes if you really want to see my version of Lego Vancouver.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a library in it.
Yeah, of course.
Of course there is. It's like one of most, like, identifiable buildings in Vancouver.
It's true, yeah. If you showed people pictures of, you know, 20 different buildings in Vancouver and said, what building is this? The library would probably be up there with ones people could name what it actually is.
Looking at other similar things people have made, though, is how the buildings people identify as the ones they associate the most with the place they live can vary so dramatically. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, something that makes architecture something that is prevalent, but also ignorable to such a large degree. Mm. One of the other ones I saw had both the football stadium and the ice hockey arena as Lego versions of those. Mm-hmm. And I would never even consider putting those because they just don't.
They're not the ones you think about.
I don't think about them, you know? Yeah. Even though, like, I've gone past them so many times.
Right, yeah.
But if someone who has gone to those places, they become more important. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, on to our books.
Yeah.
What did we read? How many things did we each read?
One.
Two sort of things I'm going to talk about.
I read half a book because I got real pandemic brain this month.
Yep. It's been bad, y'all.
It's been bad.
Technically, I read it 4, but all of mine were just photo books, like art books. Mm-hmm. So, like, I read 2 in, like, an hour today. So it doesn't really count.
They still count. How do you want to talk about them? Are you going to talk about them all together?
Oh, I'm just talking about one. Only one of them was good enough for me to want to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Well, Megan, do you want to talk about one of yours first?
Sure. So the two sort of glossy photo books that I read, I'm going to talk about together because they were both about houses. The first one was called Tadao Ando Houses by Philip Jodidio, a 2013 publication. And the other one was The Not So Big House, A Blueprint for the Way We Really Live by Sarah Suzanka and Kira Obolensky, which is the 10th anniversary edition that was published in 2009. And I'm combining them as nice glossy photo books because they did have nice glossy photos of buildings, but the Tadao Ando was really focused on a particular well-known Japanese architect who uses a lot of concrete. And while the spaces look really lovely, they were never things I could really imagine people living in. Part of this is because lots of them were open to the elements, and I live in a place where that's not a good idea.
Speaking of elements, Vancouver this week. What is going on? There, if you've ever wanted to see a city not designed for snow, dealing with snow, this past week has sucked.
Yep, they do not. But it was very pretty. So if you like looking at concrete homes with not a lot of things in them, that's a good choice. The Not So Big House, however, was kind of a manifesto against the U.S. mega mansion trend, and it was first published in 1998. 1998. I didn't even know they had mega mansions then, but I did was not like super conscious then. This is focused on like regular people who are just building way too much house for themselves. And so there's more text in this one because the architect has an argument about designing spaces that are more functional and beautiful and tailored to the individuals and family instead of just being like, well, I've got this much money. I'm going to make as much house as possible.
That honestly does seem like the American way, though.
Right? Bigger is better. And so they talk a lot about avoiding doing things like building a formal dining room or like a parlor or a den, like spaces I've never actually really seen in real life where they're like formal spaces that don't get used every day. But they had like some interesting ideas about how you would organize living spaces that are like good for the people who live in them and then allow people to retreat from the noise and the bustle if you have like a full family of people in there. So while the Ando book is inspirational and lovely to look at, the Suzanka is more useful if you were actually thinking about building a house and includes these just like lovely, dated, full-color photographs of how other people have adapted the concepts in the past 10 years of the not-so-big house to their particular needs. And I chortled over every single 90s computer in every home office.
Excellent.
Did anybody else grow up with the dining room? Or was it just me?
No. The rooms in my house changed every so often. So we had like a formal, we had a dining area.
Did you grow up in Piranesi, Megan?
Did I grow up what?
In Piranesi. The Piranesi house.
No. It was more like, it was a like an open concept plan. So sometimes they would just move all the furniture into a different area of the house to try a new thing, you know?
Sorry, that you say they makes this much more sinister than I'm sure it was in real life. You actually just lived in like a show home.
Well, it was like a Rubik's Cube. So every once in a while, someone like spun a couple things around and you just adjusted, you know? It was good for your brain, I'm sure.
You grew up in the cube from the movie Cube.
I know. That's exactly what. That's where my brain went too, except thankfully, like, hopefully much less gruesome.
I did have a friend growing up whose family had a kitchen table and then a dining room table that they only used when there were like a lot of people in the house. And they had a living room and a parlor, which was much more confusing to me, where my friend was like, we can't play in the parlor. And I was like, why not? And she was like, we don't use the parlor. It's only like for special occasions. I was like, why do you have this room in your house?
But the parlor is specifically for playing. That's where you play cards. That's what parlors are for.
I might have it backwards. I don't remember which one they called the parlor or the living room, but one of them was for hanging out and one of them was like had white carpets and we did not go into that room. And I was always baffled.
Yeah. It's like the good China.
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry, I'm just thinking, I'm at RJ's place right now, and your good China, quote unquote, is like the Pokemon plate that you have.
Yeah, that's the special plate. Like
that's the millennial version of this.
That's how we know that you're a special person, is if we let you use the Pokemon plate. That we got in Japan. It's a good plate. I don't think we're talking it up very well. Anyway, we're talking about architecture. Who else read a book? Who wants to go next?
Okay. The audiobook that I listened to is called The Man in the Glass House, Philip Johnson, Architect of the Modern Century. So as you might guess, based on the title, this is more of an autobiography. This is more of a biography, not autobiography. But it actually was sort of an interesting education in, I don't know, the social environment of architecture, like how architecture works, has worked in the past as a field and became, and how it worked as a profession. And it's kind of an insider's look at the personalities involved and how people who are very influential in driving the direction of architecture sort of work and relate to each other. This was extremely well written and well done. I will note that I don't think either I nor particularly the biographer particularly like this man. He basically was an extremely privileged gentleman who got to putter around Harvard for as long as he felt like it till he got around to bothering to finish school. Didn't have any degree in architecture or anything else really, and just puttered about doing things because he was rich and had connections and his father could get him things and stuff like that and gave him huge amounts of money, and he just bought his way into anything he wanted. And then was just very fussy and rude, and then became like a uber fascist during the era leading up to World War II, and spent a bunch of time in Germany supporting them and being all rah-rah, Hitler's great.
This guy just getting worse and worse.
I know. He's just not a good person.
He was already bad, and then it was like, and also he was kind of a Nazi.
Yeah, I mean,
he devoted 1957 to kicking puppies.
And his ego drove him. He was just very not a great person. So there's a degree to which you have to have a lot of tolerance when reading a book like this to just like, people are people, and whether you like it or not, some of the people that aren't very cool people actually have a giant influence in our world and end up being celebrated as like huge important thinkers or influential in their field or stuff like that. And we have to live with that legacy. It's not the good people that happen to come out with the most influence a lot of the time. So this is kind of an example of that. So a lot of it really, I mean, it is a biography, so it's really about his life, and it goes into huge amounts of detail about his life. But in the process of doing that, it really opens up a huge amount of the history of architecture, the different architects who were around and what they were doing and how they related to each other and how they got jobs and how the jobs transferred. I mean, the number of like projects transferred from one architect to another mid-project described in this is like that's how they all work, apparently. Whoever sees a job all the way from finish to end with the same architect? No one, apparently. Also, this guy was like hugely influential in like the architecture department of the Museum of Modern Art in MoMA. Mm. So like very, and was a close friend of the founder of the Museum of Modern Art. So that was another piece of it. It talks a bunch about the kind of the museum art world a little bit in terms of that. Definitely this would take the view of like architecture as a form of art. I mean, that was specifically one of the things that Philip Johnson kind of was doing, was getting us to think about not just architecture, but design in general, like design of everyday objects and industrial objects and things like that as art.
Mm-hmm.
And did a number of very influential shows at the MoMA using just industrial or architecture, literally just like architectural plans and models and stuff as art shows. And he was, just for those who actually have a sense of like anything about architecture, his earlier years were very much driven by the modernist style. Then he was influential in the postmodernism and like, I don't know. This is very interesting, just following along. I kept having to, because it's an audiobook, I don't know how many pictures there were or weren't in this book.
Mm.
But I kept, like, Google was my friend through all of this. I kept looking up what buildings look like all the time. So that was kind of fun, of, like, constantly looking up all of these buildings to see what they look like. At least a small number of them were actually ones that I, like, enjoyed. But many of them I was like, I get the idea and why this was influential, but I don't really like it, and I certainly would never want to interact with it as a building. Like, it looks like a very uncomfortable, unhuman building to interact with. So, yeah, it was very well done. Mark Lamster was the author. I don't think I actually mentioned his name earlier. Sorry, Mark Lamster. And it was very well written, And also, I kind of appreciate his slightly snide way of talking about this guy. He definitely had a little bit of, like, judgy side eye for this guy. It, also taking the tact of, like, look, just, like, the people who have major influence on history are not always the best people, and we need to unpack the real people that they were and the way that they were.
Mm. Do you know who the narrator was?
Oh, I don't actually know. Hold on. Narrated by Mark Bramhall.
Like, I don't really think of biographies as being audiobooks for whatever reason. It's not something that my mind thinks of.
Hmm.
But I guess, like, everything basically has audiobook versions.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think of audiobooks very often.
Yeah, the narrator is a very good narrator for the most part.
Mm. Cool. I will talk about mine briefly. I read Soviet Metro Stations, or Stantsi Sovietskogo Metro, by Owen Hatherley and Christopher Herwig. And this is a mostly art photo book by the photographer Christopher Herwig, who has done a couple of other books in the same size format of this called Soviet Bus Stops, which I read and enjoyed both of those a lot. They're just photos of bus stops in the former Soviet Union, which are much more interesting than you might think if you've only experienced bus stops in like Canada and the USA. But the Metro Stations one is one that I also was really excited to look at and read, because I have been in some Soviet Metro Stations when I spent time in Russia studying. And this caused me to go and dig up photos from my ancient, no longer existing website that I took in the metro stations in St. Petersburg and Moscow, like close to 20 years ago at this point, which is terrifying to me. But they are just really interesting looking places, I think. And the essay at the beginning of this by Owen Hatherley provides a lot of context that I really appreciated. Mentioning architects by name, going into like why these stations were built, how they were built, when they were built, the politics surrounding them, like why stations have the art styles that they do. Because the stations in the former Soviet Union are like, some of them are fancy, you know? Like they were, I think one of the terms used is palaces for the people. Like they were designed to be fancy, ornate places that people would use at originally. So Soviet metro stations were often filled with statues and art displays and pillars and columns and arches, and they look a lot fancier than metro stations I've been in other countries. And so it's really interesting to look at that, but also talks about the technological advancements that existed in some of them as well. And it talked about specific stations that I'd been to that I remembered as being like when this was first revealed in like the 1960s. This technology that was used in them would have been so impressive. Whereas, you know, when I was there 40 years later, it didn't seem as impressive, but that's because like this is the first place to use this. And then it got used in other places as well. It's just kind of an interesting thing to do. So the guy who wrote the intro essay, Owen Hatherley, also apparently has written a book called The Heavens Underground, The Metro Architecture of the Soviet Union, 1935 to 1995. I am going to look out for that book. I want to read it. I kind of wish I'd read it for this month, but reading a book this month was very difficult, as we've discussed. And so I went with the art books, photo books, because I just really like looking at – I like subway stations. I like metro stations anyway. I really like – maps of these places. I've really enjoyed playing the video game Mini Metro, in which you kind of design fictional metro lines.
Systems, yeah.
Systems are a lot of fun. And I've been really excited now that I'm back in Vancouver to ride the SkyTrain again. I wish our SkyTrain stations were half as interesting as the ones in this book. So I highly recommend this. I'm going to make a prediction. I think this might be my top nonfiction book for the podcast this year. So come back in 12 months and we'll find out.
As Matthew just mentioned, it was hard to read something this month between the holidays and pandemic brain when things get more unpredictable and chaotic. I struggled with reading this month. I want to mention two books that I checked out and did not read that looked super interesting in case anyone's just here looking for a list of architecture titles to check out. Corridors, Passages of Modernity by Roger Luckhurst, which is just an entire book about corridors, which just the concept fascinates me. Just about like the spaces for moving between spaces.
There is a thing that I was reminded of recently was how important halls used to be in buildings and how halls were really important. Mm. And then they basically became like corridors that you used to get between other rooms. So.
Yeah, yeah. The other one that I have nothing to tell you about except the title is Icebergs, Zombies, and the Ultra Thin, Architecture and Capitalism in the 21st Century by Matthew Soles. Just love the title.
Yeah.
Just really wish that I had the capacity, you know, in a regular, in any given month, I don't have a lot of capacity for getting through a nonfiction book. But this one especially was hard. So I went for the ultimate popcorn, like mainstream option as far as architecture books. And I read The 99% Invisible City.
Nice.
The aforementioned book based on the podcast 99% Invisible. That is, I think, Roman Mars is the main person, the voice of that podcast. I don't know that he does all the research himself, but this book was...
He does not.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Co-written by him and Kurt Kohlstedt. And as I mentioned, it's a very browsable book. He actually says in the introductions that you can, you know, read it in any order that you want. To create your own desire path through the book, if you know what a desire path is.
That to me, like based on my definition of desire path, that would mean reading the same sections over and over again.
I mean that could be what you decide to do. Yeah, this book, I do wonder because I have never sat down and listened to a whole episode of 99% Invisible. And so I do wonder how interesting the book is if you have, because I imagine probably a lot of these things have been talked about on the podcast before and probably in more detail. I know a few of them definitely have. I've watched Roman Mars's TED talk about flag design, which gets a write-up in here. Yeah, I will say that there is an architecture section of this book, which I read some of. I did skip around a little, but there are... 5 other sections that are not under the heading of architecture. So this is partially an architecture book.
Is one of them urban planning?
One of them is urbanism.
Oh, okay.
And infrastructure, which also might count. But yes, the sections are inconspicuous, conspicuous, infrastructure, architecture, geography, and urbanism. So I read inconspicuous, conspicuous, and architecture. And yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. As I said, if you've already listened to the podcast, I wonder if this will be a more boring read, because there were a few of the stories, like in those sections, they're each broken up into like little chunks of different stories and histories and ideas that are discussed in the span of like a couple of pages. I think the longest section that I read was like 4 or 5 pages. And there were some of them that, I really wish, like, I would get to the end of them and there'd be some kind of twist and I'd be like, no, but now, wait, now I want to just read a book about that. Where he was talking about the Boston City Hall, I think, which is a building that I've seen, which is also exciting. There's a few buildings that I've seen discussed in this book, which is always fun. Boston City Hall, notoriously an ugly building, which is something he talks about and talks about how it was like built in part to like demonstrate the value of concrete. And then he ends that section by talking about like, but concrete's really bad for the environment and, is like, actually, people are moving more towards wood as a more sustainable, back towards wood as more sustainable building material. Because concrete has a big impact on climate change. And I'm like, hey, I'd like to read more about that. Wait. Mm. You spent the first 4 paragraphs talking about how everyone hates this ugly building. and then just threw that in the end. Same with, like, there was one about a particular model who there are, like, just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of statues based on her.
Yeah.
Like, specifically in New York, but also, like, around the world. And then that section is, like... and, you know, once she sort of finished her modeling career, she spent the rest of her life in a series of mental institutions.
Yes.
And it's like, wow, whoa, I'd really like to hear more about that.
Well, you can go to the podcast and listen to that episode.
That's what I figure, yes, is that these are short versions of the thing they talk about in more detail on the podcast.
Although that episode does talk mostly about
her modeling career.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, like, also, it was just such an unexpected... turn in the story that I was like, I just want to read a biography of her now.
Yeah,
so I mean, I could mention any number of little interesting things from this book, but the concept of the podcast, I guess, if you've never listened to it or heard of it before, is the 99% invisible refers to like the things around us and the ways that they are intentionally designed or the stories behind them that we encounter every day but don't know about or think about. I mean, you know, it's a popular podcast for a reason. They're all really interesting things. I was talking to Matthew and my partner, Ian, like I was like trying to nose down, read through the end of the architecture section, but was instead too fascinated by the idea that in New York City, shorter buildings can sell their air rights, the rights to build the floors above them to a taller building that wants to go over their limit. So old theaters that are like 10 stories tall have like a limit of 50 stories, but they're not going to build, you know, it's a historic building. And so they're not going to build those 40 stories above. So they can sell those imaginary 40 stories to a developer that wants to build a 90 story building.
So capitalism was a mistake.
It's just so weird. It's just, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like it's apparently how a lot of like historic theaters in New York like fundraise to stay open. But just such a wild concept that like they can just sell the air that they're not using. I don't know. There's a ton of things like that in this book that I like then wanted to like go tell somebody about.
Would you recommend it?
Yeah, I would recommend it, I think, if you haven't listened to the podcast. Because as I said, there are some of them that I think feel kind of short and I wanted more. But as far as just like an introduction to like a wide variety of it's just like a big book of fun facts, like which, you know, is fine. Yeah, and I think I probably... learned about like a number of things about architecture that I didn't know. But are they useful? Do they give me a good basis of understanding architecture on a larger scale? Maybe not. But it was fun and I enjoyed the bits that I read.
Cool.
for whatever reason, I didn't think about picking it up to read despite listening to the podcast regularly.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing I can borrow it from a library makes me a lot more likely to to read it. I think I just didn't have like library access when the book came out. So it wasn't really top of my list.
Yeah. It was a fast read when it first came out at the library, which is always, I feel like, is a bigger deal for a nonfiction book.
Yeah.
If listeners don't know, at my library system, if a book is very popular and there's a huge hold list for it, they will make some fast read copies that you can just, you can't put holds on, but you can just go in and check out, and they have a shorter loan period so that people can read the popular thing, without waiting for 200 other people to read it first. And so I feel like usually the nonfictions that get fast read treatment are ones that are like linked to a podcast or like the cookbooks of all the Bon Appetit people where we're all fast reads.
So, this is much more text heavy. It's a social history of the office from the mid 19th century to present day. It's called Cubed, A Secret History of the Workplace by Nikhil Saval. It's a 2014 publication from Doubleday and is about 368 pages. It includes some black and white photos of office interiors and exteriors, but is much more a text that's engaging with the history and the culture around office books. And so Saval includes not only the architects in the buildings as they changed over time and the workplace changed over time, but also the conversations around office work and the people who work in offices and the idea of the white collar worker. So it includes labor relations, management books, and trends, as well as popular culture in film and writing. He focuses largely on the United States, with some of the different aspects that show up in British and European trends of the office. And like, this was largely appealing to me because I work in an office building before COVID and work from home, and my workplace is talking presently about like the future of the workplace. It is like getting people to talk about what they think that should be. And so stuff that feels like part of the modern conversation, like standing desks, ergonomic furniture, the perils of the open plan office. Those conversations started in like the 50s and 60s, which blew my mind a little bit. And this was also one of those books, you know, how like every time they talk about a different book, you're like, oh, I want to read that book. Oh, I want to read that book. But you can't read all of those books at the same time as you're reading the one book. And it was hard enough, like in this month, to read one book. So, you know, I just took little screenshots of the endnotes at the end and was like, maybe later I will read all of these books related to this one book. But I enjoyed it. It was very good.
I'm glad to hear that because I've looked at that book a few times and thought about whether or not I should get it. So it's good to know.
Mm.
All right. Appeal factors.
Looking at cool buildings.
Yeah. Inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think something we've sort of touched on is that, I mean, I guess it's sort of the concept behind the book I read, but, and I feel like we've talked about this in other nonfiction genres, is that architecture is something that we all have some, that we all interact with and like see. Mm-hmm. It is something that, whether or not we have any like knowledge about the sort of science and the whole history of the field that creates it, that we have the experience of using it or seeing it. And so I think there's probably a lot of people, if they're not involved professionally, might still have an interest in reading architecture books because they like to look at buildings or because they want to know more about, you know, if they are, I don't know, are a homeowner and want to know more about how buildings work.
Mm-hmm.
Who owns a home, RJ, really?
Ooh.
I guess who owns a house is really what I'm asking.
Right. I mean, people who live in rural areas.
As Anna's book brings up, there's also like that biography and background to famous buildings or famous architects, which if you want to know more about those particular people or those particular buildings.
Yeah, definitely. Like knowing why things look
like they do can be really interesting and learning. I think that's one of the reasons that stuff like 99% Invisible is popular, is because people are like, oh yeah, why is that thing like that that I've never thought of before? And then discovering the like horrifyingly weird way that reason that something is that way.
Yeah. I guess one of the things I wanted to mention about that book that I didn't think of because pandemic brain and I haven't had enough podcast juice today, was that I did really enjoy how much it connects like social forces with how culture and social factors influence the way that architecture has developed. When I feel like maybe especially in urban planning, I usually think of it as the opposite, that like, you know, urban planners or architects like have a vision that then like shapes how people use the space. But like in many cases, like, you know, the local government or like just the people in the neighborhood or people, like he talks about like people trying to get around like tax codes, like people trying to pay as little tax as possible influence so much. Like there's, just whole like styles of buildings that exist because, you know, people design them to pay the least amount of tax possible. And then that just became emblematic of like that part of the country.
Like when windows cost more tax money.
Yes, exactly. Or like in France, where the height of the building was like taxation was based on like the height of the building, but it didn't measure to the top of the roof. It measured to like the top of the facade. And so then people started including the like housing on the top floor. But like I don't remember what the style of the building is called. But like so there'd be like a little balcony, but it'd be coming out of a rounded roof. And now that style that is still, you know, looks so French. But was done for like very like practical cultural reasons at the time. I think an appeal factor certainly is like understanding the place you live better or, you know, a place that you're interested in through its architecture.
I would love to go. Like, I think, you know, when we get to travel again, going on like architecture tours of cities is something that I think I would like to do more someday. Someday.
I would also, just the fact that I ran into so many lists about the top books that architect students should read makes me think of like, how often do we do like displays or book lists or stuff like that in libraries that are about like possible professions that you could do. And here's a bunch of different potential professions and how to kind of get an insight into what that profession is and how it functions and why it works that way from various different angles. I don't know. That was just one that occurred to me just based on all those book lists that I was like, oh, apparently architect students are the big one everybody makes lists for around this topic.
I did check out and did not read 101 Things That I Learned in Architecture School.
Or did the book that you checked out that you didn't read that I really want to read is the anime architecture one?
Yeah, well, I didn't check that out. The reason neither of us read that one is because I got the notification that it came in today.
Oh.
Today on the 31st of December. So.
Yeah.
In demand, apparently.
Yes. Popular book.
But yeah, fictional architecture is something we didn't even really consider.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess ties back into Piranesi, which was the original Piranesi, the architect who did those etchings. Mm-hmm. Of the fictional,
just conceptual,
fantastic,
architecture, yeah.
Man, he just shows up in all kinds of places now that I know his name.
We're just going to have to add him to our bingo, our bingo squares. I think Piranesi is now like on there.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think any of us read anything really sort of practical or hands-on about the DIY or home builders. Interest in architecture.
Megan, I know you haven't seen me in a while, but do you think that has any relevance to my life?
No, I'm talking about appeal factors for other people who might be interested in architecture, but I don't like what?
Oh, true. Okay. You said we haven't read them.
I just meant we didn't read them for this podcast. We didn't read about like building decks or whatever.
They don't appeal to us specifically, but surely they appeal to someone.
True. Yeah, I guess. Sorry.
You know, those imaginary people who own homes or houses.
They exist.
They exist. I swear. I see their renovation photos occasionally on the Book of Faces.
Describe that way. It's so much more terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seriously.
All right. Any more appeal factors, or are we ready to wrap it?
It's wrap.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever else you find your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating and or review. If you've already done that, thank you. And remember the traditional podcast New Year's gift of 5 stars. Definitely a tradition, long, very old.
New Year's definitely a gift-giving holiday.
Yes.
Totally.
Traditionally tied to 5 stars.
To 5 stars on podcasts. Yes. Thank you to the folks who have taken the time to review the show. For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is the numeral, the number 4. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/bookclub4m. And find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things that we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book list of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out. No promises on reading your suggestion, but we will give you a recommendation.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, January 18th, when we'll be discussing how and why 2022 is the year of Book 2.
Then, on Tuesday, February 1st, we'll be talking about the genre of Amish romance. I'm pumped. Just so in time excited. For Valentine's Day.
Can we say we might have a special guest?
Yes,
for that
we will indeed have a special guest who is.
So we're not excited for Amish romance. We are very excited to have a special guest.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a very confusing episode to listen to you two because you two did cut out a lot.
Sorry. The internet connection is unstable. We just got it in the morning.
I have a brain, I swear. It's in there somewhere.
I think sometimes our internet connection just decides we've done too much for the day.
Yeah.
You've been online too much. Take a break.
Okay, I'm going to hit stop now.
Stop.